once again for Catalog and Cocktails, your honest, no BS, non-salesy conversation about data, AI, and everything. Why not, right? Juan, good to see you again.
Tim, always a pleasure. It's always exciting to be in people's ears and have them listen to us and our amazing guests. And today is a very special one because I've been waiting a long time to have our guests here on the podcast. We've talked about this before, and it is so timely on the topic of knowledge graphs, semantics, ontologies, and data products. And it's somebody who's been doing this for a very long time in production at a large scale. I'm really, really excited to introduce Bethany Sihan, who is the Enterprise Data Leader of Data Products and Strategy and Governance at Capital One. Bethany, thank you so much for finally being here. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me. Very excited to talk to you guys today. It's been a long time coming. I feel like we've been teasing this for a while.
Yeah, it has been. So, but before we dive in, tell and toast, what are we drinking and what are we toasting for? Or what do you be drinking and what's your favorite beverage of choice?
Yeah. So I'm at Bucknell University today and they've let me use their podcast studio, which I'm very grateful for. I am an alumni. I went here. My husband went here and we're very excited to be able to use a lot of the resources the students get to use here. But with that, it means I'm not allowed to have any liquids near the equipment. So you can see off the back corner here, I've got a bottle of Vuv, which is my favorite everyday champagne drink, so to say. I have some great memories of it. My daughter's 16th birthday, she and I did a road trip around France and we made a stop at Vuv. And it was such a different like experience from other wineries, you know, going into the champagne caves and gosh, you can still like smell it and feel the humidity in there. It was just a really, really cool experience. And the whole story about Madame Clicquot, the widow herself, is really fascinating too. So anyway, that's what I have in the background. And for toasting, I feel we're toasting to you guys, right? 7 years or something like that, right?
That is true.
This is the start of a new season.
Start of a new season. Year seven. That's what we're doing right now.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
What are you guys drinking?
Well, what are you drinking?
I similarly have a little bit of nostalgia with my drink. So I'm keeping it simple at the moment because maybe this is my cheer. I just moved into a new house, still in Austin, but a new place. So I don't have my full bar set up yet. So it's easier for me to just pour a little bit of whiskey at the moment. But this is just a Woodford Double Oaked. It was one of the first whiskeys.
Woodford, yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the first whiskeys where I'm like, wait, I think I really like whiskey. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's what I've got going today.
By the way, I had to look it up. I also was visiting.
Oh, you went there.
2022. Yeah, I was driving from. I was up in where was I? I forget. Well, I was going through. I was going from like Germany or
oh, so did you go through like Eggesheim and Colmar?
I was on a work trip and we were like driving anyways. But anyways, yeah,
great. It's a great area.
I am on my Campari run and just having a nice soda with Campari. It's such a refreshing drink. I like the bitterness of it and stuff. So that's fine. So cheers. Thanks for joining us. 7 years.
And 7 years. Congrats, guys. Thanks so much again for having me.
For being the first guest of this season. So
it's fun.
All right. So honest, no BS here. A little bit of backstory. So Bethany, you and I, we met in 2019 at the Knowledge Graph Conference and you were presenting already then like the results of the pilots that Capital One was doing with knowledge graphs. And I think now everybody's talking about knowledge graphs and ontologies and then data products and there's all the buzzwords, right? We'll put the buzzwords aside, but like you have been really doing this early on, testing this out. So I don't know, just share us, what is your soapbox on everything that's happening right now in this whole space?
Yeah, well, you know, before I get to the soapbox, gosh, when we think back to that time, that was at what, Columbia University in New York City. I think it might have been the first Knowledge Graph conference. We had talked about a customer information or customer 360 Knowledge Graph pilot at that time. And really, it was not just a pilot, it was a proof of concept where we took the ontology work that we had done and instantiated it and used it as a way to demonstrate what the power of not only ontology, but the knowledge graph, et cetera, would be for Capital One. And then, you know, fast forward to where we're at now, I feel like the whole industry's gone there too, right? So it's really cool. But, you know, overall from the soapbox perspective, without like reading it to you guys, really what we're going to talk about is the fact that we really believe that having a solid data foundation is core to, you know, really driving business, right? And so we should have data that data consumers want to use, whether those data consumers are humans, machines, agents, right? And so when we think about what does that well-governed, solid foundation of data need to be so that that information is reliable, it's easy to find, understand, use, you know, data products were really our answer to the case. But it wasn't as easy as saying, hey, we're going all in on data products, we're going all in standardization, et cetera. It's been a journey and there have been lessons learned, whether or not it was around, you know, getting executive buy-in or making sure we had the right talent in place, whether that talent was the data product managers themselves who, you know, were going through this change curve and treating data like a product, or it was, you know, we went really heavy into the investments on, you know, hiring ontologists themselves. And gosh, we only have almost 40 ontologists enterprise-wide here at Capital One now. So that was really a key part of our talent strategy. Again, data product manager for every data product. We're up to 50 some odd data products, either in development or launched at this time. And we believe at destination there'll be 80 to 100 of them. So if we just think about even that staffing model and how critical that talent is for the program and making sure that data is there, right? And so soapbox, no soapbox, we really just believe that the success of our data strategy is really really hinges on our data product strategy itself.
All right, so much to unpack. Tim, you want to go first or me?
Well, first of all, I think it resonates a lot that you're talking about, hey, it's not as simple as just, well, I guess let's just do data products.
Yeah, you can't just like slap a label on it, right? You're not lifting and shifting. Otherwise, you're going to have another.
But let's call the BS on that. Like, how many people do you see you talk to are like, we're doing data products, and they're like, and they're just slapping the label on what they've already been doing. Like, how often do you see this?
Oh, we still see it even in internal to Capital One. It's like, when we'd be like, actually, you got to go through the process here, and we will help you with that. We're really excited for your data, but you know, still seeing it internal to Capital One, and especially with how quickly we can do things now with AI, it's like, why, you know, let's move faster. And 100%, I want to move faster. But I also don't want to just take, you know, our legacy data where we still have sins of the past. We still have a lot of arbitrary uniqueness, et cetera, and just like move that into this new environment. Right. We've done so much in the progress for our prioritized core data products and trying to, you know, getting to critical mass on them, that I wouldn't want to undo it by just continuing to do things the way they always were done before. Like, why even make a move in the first place, right? Standardization is expensive, by the way. And so, you know, if you're going to go all in, you should really just do it right.
Yeah. So what was the sort of business impetus that like started this journey? Like, was there something in particular that Capital One or that you were trying to drive that kind of got this train rolling?
Yeah. I think there was actually a confluence of some really, really cool things that got me here. Whether it was luck or it was, you know what, I some divine providence, or it was really, you know, us going out and being super, super smart about some decisions we made. There were a number of efforts at Capital One that kind of converged. Of which is like some core modernization, as well as our tech transformation, and then the emerging data transformation that we went through. You know, going all in on public cloud, and then, you know, the data transformation that built on top of that. But really, we started with some standardization strategy where we believed that it made sense for, you know, our three core domains. So Capital One can't really operate without customers, who have accounts, and without accounts they transact with, right? And so we looked at customer, account, and transaction and said, like, no regrets. We should standardize the vocabularies that define these domains and reuse them across these domains, across all of the lines of business here at Capital One. And standardization, it was great. I mean, we made a lot of progress, especially because of the core mod efforts and, you know, rebuilding some of those things. You know, we were able to leverage that work even from the source perspective. But what we found very quickly was that it didn't actually solve for our broken data marketplace, that it still didn't mean that customers knew who to go to, like the ownership and accountability of that data, it still wasn't very transparent. It didn't mean that we had full comprehensive data, you know, curated data that was authoritative for all consumers to use. Didn't mean that the data was available in all the formats, whether we were talking about like, you know, APIs or streams or even the analytical tables or views, et cetera, right? Couldn't guarantee that all the data was even the same as we went from asset to asset or even joinable from asset to asset. And it didn't like guarantee data quality, data management, monitoring, didn't guarantee consumer feedback loops. It didn't guarantee that we had historical data in all cases, right? And so it quickly transitioned from like a standardization effort to a, hey, let's go all in and treat data like a product, like we would for any product or product team at Capital One, and put all of that goodness behind the data. And like the data should exist to consume. So we need to make sure that data consumers are the customers. We're talking to the customers. We're working backwards from that, what the requirements are, make sure that they know who to go to, make sure that we have someone who is accountable at an AE level, at a VP plus level for the vocabularies and the definitions of those domains and accountable for what is in them, and create these like beautiful curated collections of data that you can just go and shop for and you'll get what you need. I don't know what just happened with that camera, but I must have done something with
that's right. We got the handout to give us the full room view. what's interesting, what we were saying, what resonates with me is I've noticed that it seems like my pattern matching, there seems to be kind of two ways that kind of successful data, modern data programs get implemented. And like, one of them is like, well, first of all, you got to start with business, a good business reason, good business value. Mm-hmm. Sound like you had some good kind of transformations happening. And then usually either it starts from more of like a standardization path, and then you're like defining what good looks like, but mm-hmm. then you're like, but I need to enforce this. Like I need to actually make this become reality so that people can actually trust the data. Or, you know, it comes from kind of the other direction where it's like, we're building our data lake and, you know, there's lots of like kind of chaos happening all over the place. Mm-hmm. And you end up with, you know, 50 versions of the truth and you're like, oh, well now we need to standardize. So kind of comes from either direction. It sounds like kind of that first direction is especially where you all came from.
That's where we started from. But, you know, we quickly, you know, threw a lot of the proofs of concept. So basically iterating, we like build the thing while we do the thing too, in a lot of ways. Right. And so we were already getting immediate value from it. And so the use cases just kept coming. It kept coming and we were able to build on that. And some of that, what you're talking about with trust and whatnot, like that manifested in different ways too, with different use cases. And what does that actually translate into for trust? And how do we make sure that that's brought into the data product framework?
So you mentioned bring it into the process. Mm. What is that process today and how did it kind of evolve?
So when we first started, and before we even called them data products, we called them domains. I mean, depending on who I talk to, I may even still say domains of information, et cetera. But when we first started, and to be honest with you, the whole process itself, the whole life cycle of a data product, whether it's starting from like the first scoping and then, the definition process through to the development and operationalization of the data, it hasn't changed a whole lot, to be honest with you. We got a pretty solid framework for it. What has changed in that framework is how quickly we can do it, you know, going from some manual processes to more automation, et cetera. But part of the key like starting point is like bringing a proposal to, a steering committee made of some very senior people who, you know, a VP plus is coming in saying, I will own this data for the whole company. I'm empowered to make business decisions about this data on behalf of the whole company. And, our divisional data officers all agree to that, or they don't, or they ask questions and, you know, they go back and they do more work to better define the boundaries or, you know, who really owns what and when was one data product stop and when start. And so when I say bringing it through the process, a lot of it has to do with, tell us what your data product is, you know, the definition of it, its boundaries, where does it start, where does it stop? It's identifying key. So that's like what is the noun, the thing that is the data product? And then, you know, going from that key, because that's really the keys to the kingdom for the data product, building on that and making sure that you also then know and can say who the key consumers are, what is your addressable market and what are you doing for MVP versus, you know, as you continue to scale the data product, invest in the data product going forward and getting to, you know, that like let's say GA, but like even at MVP, you're launching something that's really, really good and is compelling to adopt. But when I say scaled, it really means that you're probably meeting about, I don't know, the majority, 60 to 80% of your addressable market's needs within that data already. And then you just continue to grow and develop as the data product continues to mature. But that's the starting point.
Who's the customer of this? And then there's also like an ROI to this, right? Like it's actually going to have an impact. There's going to be use.
I want to say what you just said, Bethany, in the last 2 minutes, I think has been the best explanation I have ever heard on like defining what a data product is, because you just talked about it. Forget about the technology. It was all about like, this is the whole, like having the whole, the business case and right, all the people in the process part of it. Because at the end, I think everybody, when you look at the data products, when we talk about that, even episodes we've had on the podcast, they end up being a little bit more technical. And at the end of the day,
it can be nerdy, right? Well, you need a data contract, and that data contract, it must define a schema, and you know, like, right?
A lot to happen, but like, this is like, you just said it, like, what are the boundaries? What is the addressable market? Like, what is the MVP? What is it going to look like? Is it going to address 80%? Is there somebody who's actually going to be accountable for this at a VP level to go? Mm-hmm.
Do you have a roadmap? Like, what does it actually look like month over month? And when you're launching new features in a data product, is really like launching more scope, right? It's adding into your model, your availability, the type of data. Yeah.
All right. Now this is awesome. And so let's talk about the people side. You mentioned earlier on that you talk about, you have data product managers. Mm-hmm. One manager per data product, if I understood it correctly. And then, so let's talk about that one is, who are they? Where do they come from? Are you trained internally? Are you hiring externally around this stuff? I think that's a question that comes up a lot now.
Yeah. So for the data product managers, we have for each data product, we have a data product manager, we have a data product AE. So the AEs can have multiple data products within their domain that they're accountable for, but it gives us that senior leader who is accountable for the data for the company. And then the data product manager is like the boots on the ground, like runs the product. They are the product owner for it. And it's not side of desk. We don't want it to be side of desk. There's still, you know, some legacy sort of performing data steward, managing data steward type roles. And they still have value and they still play a role here. But when we think about how some of that transition goes, we want to make sure that these things aren't just happening as like, and your role is also to do this. It is like your role, your job is the data product manager job. Like this is the whole thing because it's so important for the company that we believe like it should be that role. And they have a team. So very similar to other product teams, they have a pod, like a tech pod that's associated with it. They may actually have multiple tech pods that are associated with it, but it's very much like that product team structure. Sometimes we do have multiple data products or multiple data, a data product manager who is assigned to multiple data products. It's not the norm. I actually have to approve that and make sure. So when we talk about the governance processes, like it's not just approving the data. Like I'm involved and we have a very involved governance process about like actually approving that the people who are in the roles are the right people and that it's staffed to sustain to develop and sustain the data product. But we do have a few data products that are very like related or adjacent to one another. And then, so if they're smaller in scale for now, we will be fine with like that data product manager managing both of them because one, it gets it, you know, out the door before maybe there's a full investment in having multiple teams. So there's exceptions to the case, but for the most part, it is one-to-one.
I'll say I'm kind of surprised by that ratio because I even if you have some exceptions every once in a while, mm-hmm. like I definitely see a lot of cases where companies are trying to do a data products strategy and they may have one data PM juggling tens of data products.
Just the juggling though. Who wants
to juggle? They might have 500 data products, which they claim they have, right, as a company. I don't know. Well, what's your reaction to that?
The 500 data products or the juggling?
Or the ratio, both, yeah.
I think that, again, you know the whole thing when we start off with like slapping the label of data product on it. Like, what is different than what you did before if you still have someone who's like a little bit over here and a little bit over there and a little bit over there. And like you're juggling your data. That doesn't sound like it's a whole lot better than where you may have been coming from. Right. And so that generally that would be my reaction. Mm. 500 data products, by the way, sounds like a real lot of data products. Like maybe there could be very like good business reasons why a business would have that many. But, you know, if you think about the overall domains of information at any one company, you're going to have your key like back office functions and the domains of data that they either consume from or create themselves. But then like, what is your core business? And that core business is where like the differentiator will come in some of those other data products. But if you have the staffing and the budgets to do that many data products, great.
Well, you said something earlier about three domains, and you mentioned that you're like, if I understood correctly, like 100 data products. Like,
We believe at destination we'll have about 80 to 100 data products. And you know,
how do you know that that's kind of like that covering the total addressable mm-hmm. market? Like, how are you scoping this all out?
Well, we looked at all of our data. We looked at, our most used data. And then we looked at, you know, within that, like, what are those queries, those reads? What does that actually look like? We're constantly looking at what are the gaps we have in data. So what are some of the alternative data sources we should be bringing in? So even though I say like 80 to 100 in terms of our data product universe, like everything is in motion, right? And so I believe that there'll be new data that we want to bring in. We may, you know, if we're ever acquiring a business, there may be new types of data that come, like new types of accounts or service offerings that come with those companies. And those domains will come, those data products will come. You could always divide a data product up and make it smaller if you want to,
but that's how you can get to 500 then.
Yeah, that's how you can get to 500. But if you're trying to make it easier to find, understand, and use, like, I don't know, I'm still on the side of less is more in this case, but, yeah, you know what, to be honest with you, Tim, I forget what the original question was.
Oh, like the ratio.
Oh, the ratio, you know, yeah.
And like number of data products. Like, it's cool to me that you guys have such a, you know, it's like if it were a university, you'd be touting your, you know, we have a 5-to-1 professor to student, you know, student to professor ratio. Yeah. And people would be like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. The amount of time the students get, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The amount of time that the data gets with someone who's devoted to it. Like, that data is really cared for. I hope it feels cared for.
Well, and I know to some people that's a little scary, because I know a lot of CDOs and folks that I talk to, they're like, I really like the idea of data product management and things like that. But they're like, but it sounds expensive. And like, how can I hire dedicated people when I can barely, you know, hire enough data engineers and things like that?
So that brings me to one point, which I wrote about this in one of my trip reports that I did at CDO IQ, because Amy and Christina were there.
Yeah.
Really, if you can get that video, read my trip report, you can see it.
They're great. They're fantastic.
So the point I was making there is like folks or companies like Capital One, they are the North Star. Like you truly are a tech company, and you're a financial company, but you mm-hmm. are a tech company in your DNA. So everything that you just described is something in the DNA makes sense to go do. But other companies where they're not tech companies, they may think that they're tech companies. Mm-hmm. They may say they're tech companies, but they're really mm-hmm. not. And then they're like, oh, yes, we're going to do data products. And like at the super high level executive, we're going to say this. But then when you're the folks who are boots on the ground, like, I have no idea how to go do this. Right? I can't even get people. I'm just trying to get the right dashboard built or whatever. Right. So my question here is this everything you're doing, can other non-tech companies follow, or is this just an inspiration? We have to figure out a different way of doing it, or just curious, you know, how this kind of maps up to other types of companies.
Yeah, I don't think it's just because we're a tech company that we've been able to do this. In fact, you know, Capital One's roots is like based in information. So like the company was founded on the concept of using better information, more comprehensive information to, you know, make credit decisions, to actually give compelling products to consumers, right? So from the very core, that was the lifeblood of Capital One. And then when we went through the data transformation, it just so happened that it also then unlocked a whole lot of other really good opportunities for our data transformation, all like at the same time. And so I think that partly that helped us. Now for companies that are not, you know, the scale of Capital One, and you're like, it's smaller, or that smaller data footprint, maybe a little less complex, I still think that that talent, you know, whether or not it's a product manager or, I mean, you asked the question actually before, I should probably go back to that. It's like when you ask, like, who are we recruiting either internally or externally? For originally, we started off by thinking like, we can only put product managers in these roles. And then we found out we were missing some really, really great talent from a business analyst perspective. And we were missing out on some really great talent from a DA perspective. We have actually have had ontologists who cased into that data product manager role as well and have been really successful. And so what we've learned through, oh, and tech has also done it too. And so what we've learned through that experience is that it doesn't just have to be that one job family, that one job profile that can feed into a person who can really like understand what it means to deliver a good product. I mean, we all use products every day, right? Like even like your phone, if you think about it, like you will complain if your phone doesn't work and you have expectations on what a good phone is, right? Like you need to be able to make calls. You need to be able to connect to the
internet. People actually make calls now.
You need to be able to text. Okay, maybe we should go to texting first. Like you have to connect to the Wi-Fi. like you have certain like base like requirements that you have for the phone that you're going to pick in terms of the service, right? And so I think anyone could put themselves in the shoes of a customer of data.
That's I mean, you said something earlier, which was like the data exists so it can be consumed, right? So it's mm-hmm. like really understanding who are those consumers. And but guess what? I think everybody is somewhat a consumer of data in here. And I think that so you the position here is that almost anybody, I think anybody who at least who really understands the business side that is going to be one of those kind of key requirements to become a data product manager. Yeah. And I make this explicit here, because if you're only coming from it from a technical side, oh, here's you need to make sure that you have data contracts and all that stuff, yeah. Right? Like, so what? I mean,
you're missing the so what of it all. Yeah. Yeah. I think that when we've like it comes back to, again, who are your data consumers? So what is it that they're trying to do with that data? Like what credit decision are they trying to make? Or what, you know, like, is there something from a fraud perspective they're trying to either like monitor for or prevent? You know, is this something where like, you know, from a marketing perspective, we're trying to put a really compelling offer in front of a potential customer or a customer who is already in turn, like a customer we already have on our sheets, but like we want to like increase their line of credit or something like that, right? So there's understanding how that data gets used and why is key to the data product manager's success. And the other thing I would say, where we've had some people struggle is their influence itself. It's like influencing for the business decisions about that data, whether that's with your upstream systems, right? And so if there's a certain way that you want the data to come in, because you're actually consuming data from somewhere before you actually produce it as the main producer of the data for data consumers, you have to influence for that change. Like if you want to understand like the better lineage, the better data quality upstream and shift it left as much as possible, like you have to be able to influence that. Even the availability of the data itself or something goes down, you're that product lead who has to make sure it's available for whatever business process that has to execute on it. So whether it was the strategic thinking or the ability to, influence others, both up and, horizontally, those are kind of like two key areas.
I want to dive into the ontologist. Mm-hmm. So, because I've got this question now recently, because everybody's now, we were saying this before we started recording, it's like, oh, now we can say the word ontology. Yeah. Now people want to go hire ontologists.
Now everyone's saying it.
Oh, yeah. And now a lot of people are becoming
ontology. All of a sudden people have ontology management on their resumes. The experience just grew tenfold, right?
Yeah.
So the question I'm getting is like, mm-hmm. how should I hire an ontologist now? When do I need them? What are they going to start doing? Mm-hmm. You've gone through all of this, right? So
here's
a little bit of your experience here. And for folks, because there's two, think about two audiences here. Mm-hmm. Companies who are thinking about this and like, oh, do I need to go hire an ontologist? Mm-hmm. One audience I want to speak to. And mm-hmm. the other ones are people who are ontologists and taxonomists today. And they're like, oh, it looks like
one of these jobs.
I'm kind of hot right now, right?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple things that really come to mind when I think about the ontologist role at Capital One and how we started it. And then also when I think about the ontologist role now. First off, when we started recruiting for the ontology roles, we did have that, like, you know, where we think we're going to be in the next 3 to 5 years, and like building the runway for that. That's why we hired ontologists pretty early, and we hired a lot of them. But in order to do that, when we did the market research, we thought it was really important to actually set ontologists up as their own job family at Capital One. Like, this is like they are a first class citizen the same way that like our DAs are, our engineers are, product job families are, et cetera. So in order to best recruit for them, especially at the scale that we were looking to recruit, we put in some extra time into that. Now, if you're not like, again, on like the size of our data footprint, you may not have to go that far, but you still need to understand what you need from your ontologist. Do you need someone who could just like model the data? Do you need someone who can actually have the conversations and understand it almost like in a direct partnership with your data product managers? Like, oh, I hear this. Let's make sure we're giving them that and overall understand the full information architecture, so to say. Do you need someone who's going to be able to help you strategically plan for and build the tools that will, one, either capture your ontology, your modeling, or then put it into use, which would be like, you know, if you just are capturing your ontology, you have a very expensive asset sitting on the shelf. You have to connect it to data, and then you have to have something that can use those connections to the data, right? And so you're not done yet. You're not just going to build an ontology, right? And so what is it that you're actually thinking about having them do? And we have our ontologists are playing roles now where, yes, they are modelers. Yes, they are the ones who are actually helping to build the tools that automate ontology generation. Yes, we have people who are actually moved into the data product manager roles. We have ontologists who are running governance for each of the lines of business, and for what we federated out. And so it's kind of like across the spectrum here, the roles that they're doing, and really thinking about who you have to recruit to be like to meet your so what, right? I don't think it's just a one answer for the unicorn there.
Is you're hiring externally, but are you also taking folks internally and kind of they realize, well, you're data modeling, right? But
yeah,
that's a great story. But like, how much are you taking internal people with, and what roles were they in? And you're kind of they found this new place, which is like, because I've seen this also. I've seen people was like, oh yeah, I've been doing all these pieces that you just said. Mm-hmm. My title is a data engineer or a data analyst or data scientist, and that's not really what I do. I called it the knowledge scientist, right?
The majority of the ontologists that we've hired have been external hires. But we have had internal candidates who converted to the role. And so traditional data modelers have made that transition. We've actually had product managers who've shifted over, and their experience had been actually in building the products that used ontology. So we've had someone who was working in a knowledge graph space who also cased over. So we've seen those tracks. We've seen some tracks where they were really like doing the thing, but they may not have come up through library sciences or taxonomies or, you know, ontologies formally, but they were really like doing the thing. And for a while as like a performing data steward or something like that. They kind of like moved into those roles as well. And so those are some of the paths we've seen. When I've recruited and I've talked to some of the external hires, yes, we look for, do you understand why like hierarchy is important? Do you understand why like having a clear definition is important, and then how to code that definition? Like, so we have some like strategic things we check for, and then we have some very technical things we check for. But I feel like a lot of the technical stuff can be taught and can be learned on the job. And when I think about what are the harder things to learn on the job and also be successful very quickly, like that strategic thinking, understanding who your consumers are, you know, what you're working backwards from, that consultative mindset, so to say, like those are the things that are like no regrets I'm going to be hiring that over some of the technical chops, and we'll look to use our amazing ontologists at Capital One to help upskill other people who may need a little bit more help.
Oh, that's super meaningful. I like that. I know we're starting to run a little tighter on time here, so I'm gonna hit you with like three kind of lightning round questions mm-hmm. before we go into our final three questions. Which we've recently done some format adjustments. We used to do more of a formal lightning round. So this is a little bit of a throwback to that. So first thing I want to ask is like you earlier mentioned like that you're trying to move away from data stewards and move more to this data product manager model. Like, is there still a concept of like stewardship, and is that performed by data product managers or is it performed by somebody else?
Well, and when I say move away from stewardship, the concept and the things the data stewards did still happens. And so it either happens because you're a data product manager and that's actually your role now, or you're a data product manager and the steward is still doing the job that you guys are doing in partnership. Or for areas that don't have data product managers yet, they still have their performing data stewards. So we're not moving away from stewardship. We're just over time bringing it into the construct of the data products.
Okay. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then the second question is, you know, you mentioned trust earlier, and I know we riffed on it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like what to you does trust mean in the context of like data products and what data product managers are doing? I know you mentioned like understand your consumer and what they need and things like that, but is there anything more specific that you're like, hey, this is what we mean when we say trust?
I think that trust is going to actually depend again on who your consumer is. So there are data consumers in risk roles or risk facing roles that are going to really need to be able to trust that the data that they're getting is timely, that the quality of it, there's not a conflict, that there aren't conflicts between authoritative sources for that data. And then there's going to be some who are going to be like, you know what, this is good enough. And actually I can, if it's like 3 or 4 days old, not a big deal. If it's like a week or two old, actually still not a big deal. If we're looking at an old batch, like it really depends. But as long as a practitioner can say like the stuff that I'm making the decisions on is right enough and I can trust where it came from a lineage perspective, and that it's not going to give me a wrong answer if I use this data. I think like all of those things together, depending on the granularity of what you need it to be, what you need to be true, builds that trust. I think that also trust in the data means there's a name there, like, and it's apparent. Who do you go to for it? And they can actually talk to you about the data. It's not like when we first started, there was a lot of like, I don't know why that field is used. It's always been used. It's always been produced. I'm like, well, like find someone who uses it, and otherwise just don't lift and shift it. Like if they can't talk about the data, then who's going to trust you as an owner of that data? And that's another thing that just comes to mind to me. Like if it was like lightning round,
but that's a super fair point. Right. I love that. All right. I have lots of follow-up question ideas for that, but I'll hesitate to do that right now. Last one I want to ask you about, AI. Obviously, you know, there's a side of this is just like AI, using AI to be a better data product manager. And, you know, so that's one aspect of it. The other though is like AI as a consumer, obviously is changing, I think, a little bit about how we think about data and what it means to provide good data. Mm-hmm. What's your like pithy 1 or 2 minutes on what AI means for data products?
My pithy 1 or 2 minutes is going to be one. I think it's going to help us create more high quality data products more quickly. I think that we will get more data products to market than we have in the past. And I'm really excited about that. And I also think that's going to be a very compelling change for a lot of ontologists who are going to be able to like think about like what's next for actually this profession. And oh my gosh, we can trailblaze that here at Capital One. So I'm excited for that. That might be another topic someday. Then the other side of this in terms of, you know, when we start to talk about AI in the expansion of the types of data that AI is hungry for, we're really like we're working backwards from agents themselves because we feel like we catch a lot of the other AI components by going for agents. And I think that it really means that my original answer of there being to 80 to 100 data products, maybe a little off, where we start looking at the other types of context we need to bring into our universe. Some of it will naturally just, you know, fall right into some of the other data products. Like, you know, if we're just talking about like unstructured data itself, like, you know, the transcript from a phone call that gets annotated and added into like one of our servicing activity data products, like that's a natural thing. But there may be new types of data and domains that we need to bring into our universe and probably also develop very quickly for agents themselves that will really be specific for their use cases and maybe not for the other humans and machines that we've traditionally designed these for.
Well, we need to have another. I have so many follow-ups and we need to have another episode. Like,
yeah, we'll need a part two.
Well, so honestly, I would love to kind of like to dive into like the ontology part. Like you just said, what's next?
Yeah.
At the Capital One.
Yeah.
To know what you can share.
Well, in your last comment there kind of opened up the door there for like, well, what other kinds of the idea of a data product is expanding a lot. It's an informational product, a knowledge product, you know, again, I mean, like we right can now, easily get into buzzword territory here, but like, if you just think of like,
we said no buzzwords. Yeah.
Sorry, I was thinking about, okay, you have a data product. You have a metadata.
I tried only to say context like twice, maybe.
I was going to say we have a context product.
No, my answer to that one is no.
Honest, no BS right there. All right. To wrap up, three final questions for you. What's your advice? Who should we invite next? And what resources do you follow?
I think my advice would be just start and start backwards from your data consumers. Don't start from an ontology. Don't start from your technical solutions. Start from like the why that you're doing it all. I think I've been probably saying that to you, Juan, at least for a long time, where I say we're going to work backwards from use cases. But I really believe that gives you the business value then to go and have that conversation, be like, look what we did here. Now think about how we would expand upon this in the precedent sets. Who you should have next. I actually don't have any specific people, but I have something I'm really, really interested in. Mm. So my kids and I, my kids are in college, so a little bit older, but we've gotten super into F1 over the last 4 or 5 years. And whether we're watching practice or watching qualifying or watching a race itself, like the real-time data, like the how important that and like to safety data is, like the whole thing about the data in F1 and racing in general, I think is fascinating. I would love to hear more about that. I've been trying to do some research lately, and like I just think I want like certain people to win sometimes, but like I can't turn off my data brain when I'm watching these races and thinking about things. Yeah. But
you got that team of like 10 people in front of all the TV monitors and everything like that. Right?
That's a good one. Like real time and put in like in with respect to
speed. I know ServiceNow.
Like how much
ServiceNow.
Can we get Bill McDermott to just phone somebody up?
I don't know if you guys have any role in this one, but. Bethany is very interested in hearing more about F1 and data.
I love it.
And then I think you said like, what do I follow? So, you know, this is maybe just a little bit more personally, like I am probably more of a knowledge seeker or an information seeker. So if I have something for work that I'm working on, I will go look for the information. I will ask people that I respect and, you know, who to go talk to and like who they think like those other people I should go talk to. And I do a lot more of that curation myself, whereas where I follow things and things that will automatically be in my inbox or in my Instagram feed tends to be more things that are like bring me personal joy. Things that are shared interests with my kids or my husband, or even just like, what do I do like in my off time, whether it's Pilates or like running or gardening or something like that. So probably not the answer you're looking for, but I am not a big follower of things unless we're just starting talking about like data in F1.
Love it. Bethany, this has been a fantastic conversation and I look forward to doing like a part two sooner than later. There's so much, because this world is moving so fast and very curious to know about what is the next data product buzzword and what ontology is going to go and so forth. So anyways,
cool. Guys, this has been so much fun. Thank you.